I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. What would Jesus do? That question gets asked a lot as a kind of moral reality check, and it's what reporter Jack Sullivan has titled his investigative report for Commonwealth Magazine. His piece looks at some of the restrictions that the Boston Archdiocese and the Springfield Diocese are attaching to churches' real estate transactions. Jack Sullivan is with Commonwealth Magazine, and he's the senior investigative reporter. And Jack, I open-mouthed is my reaction to your piece.
Mine too, as I found it.
Let's start with what is called a restricting deed and explain what that is and how it relates to the Boston Archdiocese and the Springfield Archdiocese.
Well, basically, Callie, when a seller agrees to a purchase of a piece of property, they can put into it a restrictive use that would, for instance, if it's a commercial area, they can, and they have a CVS nearby, they could say no Walgreens can go into here. Or they can put other restrictive uses on it for restaurants or things like that. Anything that doesn't cross the line for civil rights. Years ago, it used to be that there were restrictive deeds that were placed into restrictive uses placed into deeds that would prevent non-whites from buying homes in neighborhoods until that was discovered. And then the Supreme Court ruled in a case in the late 40s called Shelley that they could not do that. But use restrictions themselves are not unusual. What is unusual here is that the Catholic Church has been putting them in probably since about the mid-2000s in the Boston Archdiocese, a little bit earlier back in the Springfield Diocese, that basically prohibit use for any properties that contradict Catholic teachings. The other interesting point about it is they've also expanded that to restrict use for charter schools in some areas because they're fearful of the competition. And they've also put in the case of the Springfield Diocese, in perpetuity. In other words, anything that contradicts Catholic teachings can never be done on that property. The Boston Archdiocese has been putting use restrictions on for 90 years or longer. The problem with that is the Massachusetts statute only allows reuse restrictions to go for a length of 30 years. So right there, you may have a problem. And it was quite interesting when I found it. I was surprised.
Well, I want to get to just how you stumbled across this, but just let's unpack what you've just said. So just so people are following this, this is a restriction after you have bought the property. So I buy the piece of property and the church can restrict how I use now property that I own through the Boston Archdiocese for 90 years for certain kinds of uses if I wanted to go that way. And in Springfield, in perpetuity, forever and ever. Amen.
Not even you, Callie, but anybody you may sell the property to, that use restriction is supposed to carry over into the deed for that period of time.
All right. So one could imagine, if we're thinking, well, if the church says, look, I'm not selling to a strip club, that maybe I can go with that, so that sort of is really obviously not where how a church would like to see property that it's owned, used afterwards. I can sort of understand that. But there are many other restrictions, and I'd like you to outline some of those that the church has said. Well, the property can't be used for this, this, and this.
Well, in the Springfield Diocese, it's a straight blanket use restriction that says nothing that contradicts Catholic teachings. That could be anything. It could be abortion counseling. It could be birth control. It could be satanic materials being published or what they deem to be satanic materials. In Boston, they're a little bit more specific. They put in it as a rule that it can't be used for an abortion clinic or anything that has to do with abortion counseling, for euthanasia counseling, stem cell research, and in some cases, birth control. They also say that some of the properties that are being sold cannot be used for another church or another house of worship. one of the more baffling restrictions that they've been putting on, which is what started me on it in the city of Lawrence, is that properties cannot be used for a charter school.
And that's even if the property they're selling is already a school sitting empty.
Right. That's what started it. I found the Holy Trinity School, which had been closed in 2004. It has been a school for close to 100 years, about 85 years. And it's in this quiet neighborhood, and it's behind a church. And the Catholic Church put in it for the developer who bought it a use restriction. Initially, he wanted to use it as a charter school because Lawrence needs schools. And they specifically put in there, can never be used as a charter school. And they have another school that is closed that a group has been trying to buy, a foundation has been trying to buy for a charter school up there. And the Archdiocese has refused to sell it to them because they don't want it to be used as a charter school. They say flat out, we don't want the competition.
But yet the school is sitting empty. And, I mean, if the school wasn't empty, I don't understand.
you've come into my world then, Kelly, because I certainly don't understand. I mean, I understand to an extent what they're saying. But the problem that happens up in Lawrence, and it's in some of the other use restrictions for schools that they've sold in other areas, is that their enrollment is down to the point that they've got five closed schools up there. I'm not sure that the opening of a 220-student charter school is going to threaten that enrollment anymore. So it's baffling to me why they have that use restriction on there. But then the other ones, when you look at the abortion clinics, the euthanasia, it's easy to say, well, yes, that's against Catholic teachings. But for 90 years, you don't know how things are going to change. And on top of that, it's the Catholic Church that makes the decision about what it is that contradicts Catholic teachings. For instance, if there's a medical office that opens up there and they have brochures for Planned Parenthood, does that then cross into the line of abortion counseling? If there's a council on aging or a senior center there and they have end-of-life counseling, does that then cross the line into euthanasia? Well, that's the decision that the Catholic Church gets to make.
And there's the rub. The church makes a determination about whether or not anything could potentially violate these its values, and nobody else is making that decision.
Right. And the other problem, too, Callie, is some of these properties are being sold to municipalities, cities and towns. And for them to agree to this decision, what they're doing is saying, we will enforce a certain faith's doctrine and teachings. And that crosses the line of the separation of church and state. It happened in Wellesley, for instance. The town had agreed to purchase St. James the Great property on Route 9. And when they did, the church put in its use restrictions. The ACLU got wind of it and started asking questions. Town officials decided that there was going to be a lot of problems with this. They went back to the church and they had it rewritten. So those use restrictions were taken out. But one of the things that they did is that they wrote into the restrictions that it can only be used for certain purposes, housing, in public schools under the domain of the local school committee. What that does is, in a roundabout way, it eliminates use for a charter school. Because while charter schools are public schools, they don't come under the oversight of the local school committee. Mm-hmm. So a charter school is prohibited from being used at this property.
And we're talking about essentially a private entity having an impact on a public piece of property.
Right.
So that's kind of weird. I'm speaking with Jack Sullivan. He is a senior investigative reporter at Commonwealth Magazine. And his latest piece is, What Would Jesus Do? He is looking at the Boston Archdiocese and the Springfield Diocese restricted deeds policies, which limit the use of property that the churches could sell to you, but after you own it, you still have to follow what the church says.
And everybody that you sell it to subsequently
has to do that. So, with regard to the fact that it's a private entity selling to a public property, the Wellesley case, they compromised because the ACLU got involved in this and they ended up with a compromise deal that the town feels works well for them. But to your point, it eliminates the perceived competition from charter schools. And it doesn't really answer the question about private entity, public public property, and how do those restrictions work that way?
It doesn't, Callie, and that's part of the problem is that I've spoke with the Attorney General's office and as well as some other experts in the area, and they said until it is challenged, nothing can be done about it. And if somebody wants a piece of property and whatever the use restrictions are don't affect them, certainly they're not going to challenge it. So somebody withstanding has to challenge it, and they haven't. But recently, there was an issue out in the Worcester Diocese. The Telegram Gazette, one of their columnists, Diane Williamson, wrote about this gay married couple who was looking to purchase. It's an old 44-room mansion out in Sutton called Oakhurst. And it was a great piece because it addressed one of the hypothetics that I had talked to spokesmen about. They said, oh, we can't address hypothetics. That would never happen. These two men wanted to purchase this property and turn it into a banquet hall. After some negotiations, they came back with a counteroffer, and the church, which had initially agreed to a price, came back and said, no, we don't want to sell to you. And the reason they gave publicly was because we don't believe that you have the proper financing for it. Well, when they got an email from the realtor on it, at the bottom of the thread was an email from the Monsignor at the Worcester Diocese that said, we're not comfortable selling to a gay couple, and we don't like the idea of them possibly holding gay weddings and gay ceremonies at this mansion, which, by the way, is a former treatment center for pedophile priests, so a little ironic there.
Wow.
Then at the end of the email, the Monsignor wrote to the realtor. Clearly, this was never meant to, you know, for the eyes of the buyers. Find the right words to tell them. Hmm. So while they're publicly saying one thing, the real deal was contained in this, which is gay marriage, contrary to church teachings.
So with regard to the whole moral piece of it, and the reason you title your piece, What Would Jesus Do?, the sort of overlay of ethics and morality, back to the charter schools question, the perceived competition from charter schools, a lot of the charter schools that wanted to purchase these empty schools and build there were addressing underserved communities, communities that really need a school, and perhaps even, as we know, sometimes charter schools have a particular focus, need the focus that was to be offered by some of the potential buyers, and yet this wasn't happening. That goes straight against the mission of the church, which is to serve underserved populations. A lot of people are having problems with that.
Yeah, you would think that this would be a no-brainer for the church, that, you know, they have these closed schools. A charter school could move right in, would take care of the property. It would no longer be vacant. The church would get some money that they need. But they're adamant about the competition. One of the things that I had picked, you know, it's not just Lawrence. Mayor William Lantigua up in Lawrence had written a letter to the Cardinal after my piece came out, asking them to review the policy. And they were basically told, well, we're not going to. It's about competition, and our first priority is to protect Catholic education. One of the other things that I found out was recently Mayor Menino and a group of city charter advocates in Boston entered into a compact where the city would work with charter schools to try to find appropriate placements for them and to help them get started with the raising of the charter cap. The Archdiocese was invited in, but part of the compact had made a commitment to find facilities for the charter schools. What I heard from people involved in it is that the Catholic Church would not agree to that facilities piece of the compact because it would then bind them to selling church properties. So what they did was they changed the wording to say, we'll assist in attempting to find facilities.
I note a quote from your piece. This is from Suzanne Wright, a trustee of a foundation that tried to buy a closed parochial school on behalf of Community Day. Anybody who believes in God has a responsibility to do that, she says, especially people who believe in Jesus. She's talking about the moral course of action for the church as she sees it. So a lot of people are quite upset about this. So, okay, so it's been going on. They apparently are in some kind of legal limbo thing here that, since nobody's challenged it yet, now perhaps with your piece and people know more about it and more people who've been turned away will come forward and maybe take it to another step. But here's the point. They need to sell this property, right?
Well, I mean, mass attendance is down, therefore donations are down. They're starting to feel they're not getting the kind of bequests that they used to get from the older generation. Somebody would die, they'd leave their house, they'd leave their estate, they'd leave their property. Those kinds of things aren't happening anymore. So the church isn't accumulating donations at the rate that it used to. And there's still a lot of pressure on them to perform some of the very needed and very well-regarded charitable works that they do, you know, regardless of what anybody thinks about the church's stance on a lot of social issues. They still do a lot of work for low-income people, you know, a lot of food pantries and housing and things like that. But the money just isn't there for it anymore. So, yes, they have a lot of unused properties that they do have to sell.
And to be clear, the reason that there's pressure on them to sell it now has to do with the whole pedophile scandal and trying to recoup from there in terms of paying off debts that they've incurred from it and all the rest. I mean, and that's also the reason why a lot of people pull their kids out of Catholic schools.
Right. It's a catch-22. It's a never-ending circle for them. And you're right. The pedophile priest scandal was the biggest factor in what's happening to the church finances. But it was going that way. When you go back to the 70s and 80s, people questioning the fealty that they had to Catholic dogma that they've always had about birth control, about abortion, about euthanasia, things like that, about women in the priesthood. So there started to be an erosion of mass attendance there. And like you said, as more alternatives came up for Catholic education in charter schools, in more accessible private schools, there was an erosion of enrollment there as well. So that started to hurt.
Well, I don't think we've heard the last of this now that you've shed a little light on this subject. It's very interesting, and I, for one, will be looking for part two of your piece to see how this works out. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly.
We've been talking about the Catholic Church with a focus on how the church is using deeds associated with its land sales to promote Catholic values. And I've been speaking with Jack Sullivan, Commonwealth Magazine senior investigative reporter, whose piece is titled, What Would Jesus Do? Does the Golden Voice Award mean anything to you? How about the Audi? These are some of the highest honors that are associated with audiobooks. We're going to be talking about summer reading with a focus on road trips and the best audiobooks out there to keep you company behind the wheel. I'm Callie Crossley, and you're listening to Boston Public Radio.